From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this Monday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning. We'll talk, obviously, some uniforms as Ole Miss announced the debut of a new white helmet to go on the white jerseys and white pants for the game against Texas Tech here on September 1 in Houston. So that, as well as we are a year and a couple days since the end of the Hugh Freeze era. We'll give some thoughts a year later on that as well, kind of build the show around that. Today, a show that is brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Pimento Cheese Bites next door at the Oxford Crystal. Several of you have emailed me, tell me how much you like them. Go by, get them now. Pimento Cheese Bites, also pimento on your crystal if you so wish. It doesn't really taste like mayonnaise. It doesn't taste like things we talked about the other day. More just tastes like really good cheese. So give it a shot there at the Oxford Crystal, as well as the daiquiris and the Speed Pass Plus at the Oxford Exxon. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. And tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. It's really that simple. There's no hassle. There's no haggling. It's one of those deals where the process is very fast, and then how quickly it goes after that is up to you. You get that quote, and you can shop it around. You can call other dealers, all those things. That's certainly your prerogative. Or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of the podcast, self-included, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's nice and easy. You get a great Ford vehicle. You get great service after the sale. I mean, tremendous service after the sale. You get delivery options, all of those things. Anything that you might need, they'll take care of you there. Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. At the end of your deal, tell them you heard about Clark Ford on any of our podcasts, and it's $500 off the bottom line.
So quickly, we'll say it's on social media, it's on our board, it's everywhere. Ole Miss will wear a white helmet with the red Ole Miss script, white jerseys, red numbers, red shoulder stripes, white pant, red stripe down the pant. Those are not new. They just are coming new with a white helmet for Texas Tech. And it looks like nationwide and inside the Ole Miss fan base, people like uniforms, especially in July when nothing else is really going on. Look like pretty good approval, as they've added a pretty nice look to the wardrobe.
I loved it.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm a uniform snob. I'll be the first to admit it. I know it's sort of sacrilegious among some Ole Miss people, and I don't hate the gray pants. But if you're not into the tradition, and this is the part that I've been trying to think about, how do you articulate this? It's okay for fans to be into the tradition. I guess it's cool. It's part of fandom. The kids don't know your tradition. They just see your uniform. And I don't know that the gray pants do anything for anybody. They're not bad. I've heard people go, they're awful. I don't think they're awful. I mean, with the home jersey, the red jersey, they look pretty good. I still like the white pant better, but the gray pant looks good. I think the gray pant with the white jersey on the road just looks kind of dirty. And I don't mean like nasty. I just mean like it's
dingy. Dull.
Dingy. Yes, dingy. Like it's got dust on it.
Yeah, the white on white is such a better road uniform. I changed my mind a little bit in the midst of not really trying to have a very articulate discussion, to be honest, because I made some message board posts negative toward the gray pants, and I was mostly trolling. I'll admit it now. I was mostly just having some fun last night. But somebody put up, Ole Miss wore the red top with the white pant against UT Martin, Chad Kelly's last year, maybe, or whatever year they played UT Martin. I don't remember now.
Yeah.
Either way. And then under it, they put the uniform they went to Baton Rouge with Bo Wallace wearing the red top on the gray pants. And what I will say, when I saw them next to each other, and it kind of changed my mind a little bit, the gray pant side by side looked better on the red jerseys than I thought it would, even though I've seen them 1,000 times. And two, there is something about the red on white that makes you look really generic. And I don't know. When I stared at it, I went, yeah, I get how that looks like literally everyone else. And the gray pant does have a semblance of distinctiveness to it and does give you a little something. So I kind of came off it a little bit at home, honestly, when I've been very pro-white pant at home.
With one qualifier.
Yeah.
When you wear the uniform snob, the people who are not uniform snobs are so mad at us right now because we're talking uniforms on a Monday, 2 weeks before the ball camp begins.
It's all good. Go ahead.
If you're going to wear the powder blue or the light blue, whatever the terminology is for the lighter blue helmet.
Yeah, powder blue.
Okay. You can't wear those. You either have, in my opinion, you can do whatever the hell you want to do. No one's going to come to me and go, we have your approval, Mr. McCready. That's not going to happen. In my opinion, it's not a good, particularly good look, that helmet with the gray pants that have a different blue than the helmet.
Yeah, I'll go there.
If you're going to wear the powder blue, you either have to change the striping on your gray pant or go with a white pant, in my opinion. I'm with you on if you're going to wear the navy helmet, the red jersey looks better with the gray pants than it does the white pants. But if you're going to wear the powder blue helmet, which everyone in the fan base appears to have fallen in love with, and it is a really good look, I get it.
It shows up better on television for whatever reason, too.
It just doesn't look good with the gray pants because you're using too many colors of blue, and suddenly you're the Memphis Grizzlies or the Oklahoma City Thunder, where it's like, what the hell is your color combination?
Yeah, was it Memphis that uses three different shades of blue?
And Oklahoma City uses the whole damn rainbow. I mean, it's just everywhere, and you don't even know what their colors are. It's like, hey, let's mix a little yellow in here and some orange. And we'll drop some blue in here. And okay, here's a different blue. Everybody's got black. And we've said many times, Ole Miss has the best possible combination of colors here, red, white, and blue. It's hard to beat that. But if you're going to mix in a different blue, and I get why they do, I do think you got to start being careful there. I like using different uniforms. There's how many programs in the country do people really associate with a specific uniform? Alabama.
Michigan.
But Michigan's changed theirs up so much.
They have. But their logo is still very identifiable.
It is. Penn State, because they're boring as hell, and everyone's used to that boring uniform.
Ohio State.
Yeah.
And they've played some.
Well, they've played a lot, which tells you that when they basically test-driven the gimmick uniforms, the recruits have eaten it up. That's what it tells you completely. Let me tell you, the focus groups on these deals are 16 and 17 year old boys who run fast and hit hard.
Yeah.
That's the focus group.
Texas, USC.
And yeah, man, that's about it. I mean, we have a traditional
LSU. Uniform.
LSU. There just aren't many. And so I think when people get hung up on we have a traditional uniform, and if you get away from tradition and whatever, it's a tradition to you. I don't know that it's a tradition that is so pervasive that it actually stretches to the aforementioned focus group. I don't know that a collection of 16 and 17 year old boys who run fast and hit hard.
And now there's a middle ground here. Don't go be Oregon and wear a different one every week just because.
No. But like, if you were to make that all white uniform your road uniform, cool. I love it. I thought it looked really clean.
Yeah, I have no critiques at all. The only even positive constructive criticism that I saw that I went, yeah, I would at least be interested in seeing that, is I do think you probably could have put a powder trim on a couple of things. But I did like just the two-color, simple white and red and call it a day.
Yeah. Yeah, you could mix the powder in somewhere. I saw someone compare it to Wisconsin. I don't know that but I think Wisconsin's all road uniform when they wear white pants is a really good look.
But it's their look.
Sure.
It's Nebraska's look. Nebraska's another uniform, by the way.
Yes.
Even though their football team's not good. It's kind of back to our conversation the other day. That's that's changed over time so much because, you know, teams aren't remaining traditional powers. I mean, you know, Florida's put in that white helmet with the just the elf on it in recent years.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I liked it. It's all good. It'll be a good look. Texas Tech will wear either red or black jerseys on black pants and a black helmet. So it'll be a good contrast. And Ole Miss will win the uniform battle on September the 1st. I promise that.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to beat them. Now that you've mentioned that, I do think maybe mixing in a little powder blue would be, if you're going to do it for a permanent look.
You could outline the red in powder, or you could put a thin powder stripe on the helmet in the middle of the red stripe.
When LSU broke out the all-white in Oxford that day that they got crushed on the field but won such a uniform championship that it was unreal, they had a little gold in there too, right?
It was little gold and little purple, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, powder would have been the color other over navy because you still want it to be real crisp and light.
Yeah, yeah, not navy. It was good. I was, and I loved the way they kind of did it. That was very smart. It was well thought out. Whoever unveiled it, whoever's plan that was to do it on Shark Week, which is a pop culture phenomenon in our country, to do it at the start of Shark Week was really smart.
Those LSU uniforms were white helmet, purple LSU, gold tiger, white jersey, purple numbers, and then their traditional regular gold and purple stripe on the shoulder.
Okay. I knew it was primarily purple, but they mixed in some gold. Those were fantastic.
It has gold, just like I'm mentioning, sort of, except I don't want the shoulder stripe being powdered, too. It has the gold middle shoulder stripe of the three stripes, and then the gold middle stripe on the helmet.
Gotcha.
Just enough, and the tiger head, obviously, is gold, because it always is.
Yeah. That's a phenomenal emblem, by the way. I mean, working with that is you got to work hard to screw up an LSU uniform because that emblem is fantastic.
Yeah, but just from a color standpoint, you're right. Ole Miss and Kentucky start the competition well ahead of everyone else.
What has Kentucky done?
I just mean their colors, the blue and white. Oh, like starting out, Ole Miss and Kentucky are at the biggest advantages.
Oh, absolutely. It's like Georgia, when one of your colors is black, it's kind of hard to make that work. I mean, it limits you a little bit.
And they dumb it down.
That's your primary color, yeah. And if one of your primary colors is, in LSU's case, purple, I mean, it'd be easy to screw that up. Because you can mess purple up. I mean, you can go hideous on purple fast. Like when they wear the purple jersey, everybody goes, oh, that's awful.
That's true. They don't wear it. Wear it's white bad. 11 times a year.
Isn't that weird? That's a bad jersey, and yet, like when the Vikings wear their purple jersey, it's a pretty good look. Although the Vikings white on white is much better than the purple on white.
The white on white is very good.
It's a really good look.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. You know, I didn't mind the white on white with the blue numerals back in the day either. I mean, they've kind of phased those out, but they didn't bother me. They were fine.
No, I actually liked it a lot.
Yeah. With the navy helmet, it did all right.
Yeah. But with white pants.
I don't think we'll ever see red pants for Ole Miss. That's probably the one thing they'll never get into. Because red pants does give off kind of a Conference USA look.
Yeah, it's hard to pull that off and make it work.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
I do remember in high school when we got red pants once, we were all super excited to wear red pants because we normally wore white pants.
Y'all wore red, white, and blue?
Yeah, well, it's red and white. Okay. Red and white. We mix in some gray.
Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough.
We got red pants for a road game once, and we were all pumped.
Did you win?
Yeah, we always won.
We always won. Gotcha. It's good. All right, 10 weekend thoughts up at the site. We're going to go into a little Hugh Freeze discussion in a minute, but that is Russell back on vacation tonight, I believe, so he'll start kicking in. his normal amounts of recruiting coverage for you as well, so you can get ready for that and more. So just kind of giving you an update as far as what's up at rebelgrove.com. And then with this break, I'll tell you about Locker Stockers. They take the hassle out of stocking your locker or your suite this football season. As football season's getting close, the customer places the order, and they handle purchase and delivery to the locker or suite before game day. Also, they're offering an early sign-up bonus by offering 10% discount on season packages if the customer signs up before August 1st. So call 662-586-1487 or email info@lockerstockers.com to take that hassle out and let them stock the locker for you.
Speaking of stocking your lockers, you want to stock your tailgate. We'll be here before you know it as we approach the end of July. Ole Miss's home opener, September the 8th against Southern Illinois. You want to get all of your, it's the first of seven games. You want to get all of your tailgating taken care of now. Get in touch with Seven South Tailgating. Kyle Thornton and the crew there celebrating 10 years of business this season. If you try Seven South once, you'll never tailgate without them again. They can set up your own personal gear. You can rent everything from them. No one's going to match their customer service, their attention to detail. Maybe you're coming up just for the conference games. Maybe you're just coming up for one game. You're coming from way out of town. You're coming for one weekend to meet up some friends, former classmates, that kind of thing. Or maybe you're coming to every single game. Maybe your tailgate is easy and simple. Maybe your tailgate is really intricate and complicated. No matter what, no matter which of those categories you fit into, Kyle and the people at 7 South can take care of you. It's 7SouthTailgating.com. As Chase mentioned, podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. He's the sponsor of my 10 Weekend Thoughts, which are up on the site. The site is rebelgrove.com. It's part of the Rivals.com network. You can subscribe to Rivals. If you do it for a year, it's less than $9 a month. You can't get a very bad Subway sandwich for $9 a day, much less $9 a month. So give it a look, rebelgrove.com. Harry is a RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you are looking for. The results that you get are updated daily. And then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com. He will take care of the rest. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com.
So we missed it. It was over the weekend. We thought about doing some of this on Friday and frankly forgot. We had Jeffrey and some other stuff going on, but the Matt Luke tenure, counting the interim, has been going on 1 year now, 1 year since Hugh Freeze stepped down, or however you want to put it, as Ole Miss head coach. And we talked plenty about the weeks leading up, the Tom Maher stuff, what we kind of thought at media day, the 10 days that something was going to happen. But I will say, Neil, where were you when you first heard it? What was kind of that afternoon? I guess take me through it from when you first heard it was a possibility to, I guess, pulling up at the pavilion for the press conference.
Well, are you talking about the day?
The day, yeah, the day. We've talked a ton about the days before. We've never really talked much about the day.
So it was a Thursday, right?
I believe that is correct.
I had gotten back from Washington on that Monday and had basically been told that all was quiet. But I got a sense that all was not quiet. I can remember talking to you saying he's not going to make it to the start of the season. We didn't know when he was going to not make it. That Wednesday was really quiet, and that Thursday was just nothing for a while. And I'd made my standard calls, and you and I had taped a podcast, and I don't think we had any feeling that it was imminent. And so it was July, it was hotter than hell, and Carson was bored out of his mind. And so I said, let's go see a movie. He wanted to see the Planet of the Apes movie. And so we went, we bowled a game and my phone was super quiet. And we got into the movie, and I had my phone on silent. But you know what's funny, Chase, is I almost turned it off that day because he said, Dad, turn your phone off and watch the movie. Because I have a tendency sometimes, just like a lot of people, to sit in the movie and I'm bored and I'll check Twitter, see if the Cubs were probably playing that day. I mean, there's no telling. I might be following pitch by pitch. I almost turned it off, and I didn't, and I got a text. The first text I got was from Barrett Sully, and he said, "You hearing something?" Which is so vague. I'm like, "Well, I'm hearing a lot of things. What are you hearing?" And he goes, "Well, I keep hearing stuff out of Oxford." And he was still being really vague. And then I got another, I guess maybe Stephen Godfrey texted me and said, "What are you hearing?" And at that point, I'm in kind of panic mode, because once two or three of those kind of people get in touch with you, you know something's like really rumbling. And I guess I was sitting, I told Carson I had to step out of the theater and I'd be out in the lobby. And I went out there, and by the end of that movie, it was pretty obvious that something was breaking. And I got back home, walked in the door, and I told Laura, I'm not going to be here tonight. I've got to work. I don't know what's happening. Something's happening big. And I texted Freeze and I said, have you resigned? And he responded quickly with, "No, I was fired." And then it was just, frankly, I mean, keeping this real here, if you've got kids in your car, hit the fast forward button one time. I said, "Holy shit." And called you, and we started kind of formulating a pretty quick plan. We already had some things in place, and went to the pavilion, and they had the whole thing about go to the loading dock. And
yeah, it had a cloak and dagger feel to it, because you and I had talked, I guess, before the freeze text or the confirmation or however it kind of went down at the end. And I kind of had the same thought, because I remember this the rest of my life. Kara had made baked ziti, and I was just sitting down at like the breakfast table to eat, and my phone buzzes like 10 times all at the same time. And I looked down and I said, "I've got to go." And she goes, "Should I wrap this up?" And I thought, "No, it's going to be a while. I'll figure food out later." And it was about 7 hours, because we got texts later. "Hey, press conference now." And they said, "Go to the pavilion loading dock and then go into the basketball press conference area." And the reasons for that is they didn't want fans. They wanted to hide it. I completely get it. It was the right move. But it did. I mean, that's the night of the ill-fated hostage video that we always laugh about. And it did, though. The whole time had just a surreal feel to it. I mean, I remember, I don't know if I've told this on the podcast or not. Maybe I have. Like, when I got there, I walked into the media room, set my stuff down, and then went to the press room. And when I walked in, Ross was in there, and he was sweating like crazy, and he was trying to get ready for the press conference. They're obviously going to televise it, and he's getting his tie on. And we talked for probably 3 or 4 minutes, but I just looked at him and thought, he's having this kind of frazzled moment where he's trying to collect himself, and he ended up doing it. I thought it was one of his better performances. He was really good that night, but
he was very good, and yeah, he got teed up by a really bad performance in front of him.
Well, yeah, you couldn't have looked worse. I mean, than that. So it was it was going to be a positive for him no matter what. And then he had a really nice effort as well. But it was interesting catching him in the few minutes right before he walked up there, where you could tell this thing had gone basically right down to the wire. It's what he'd been dealing with all day. I mean, they had to negotiate, even if it's not the word, basically figure out the entire strategy over about a 6-hour period that had just ended right before this thing was called, and walks up to the podium and then has to answer lots of questions in Lord knows how many different directions on national television. So it was, considering the background to it, pretty good performance that night.
Oh, his performance was excellent. Bitter's performance was one of those that was so bad that I remember thinking to myself, how in the world does someone like that become the head of a organization as big as the University of Mississippi? How does that happen? Keep your dreams alive, kids. Anything's possible. one of those deals. I'm not trying to be mean. It was just awful. It was a terrible look. I thought he lost capital that he'll never get back that night. Whatever little bit he had,
such a better move to have Ross by himself.
Well, I think Vitter's tone deaf. I've always believed that. I think he has no understanding of how poor he is at public relations. And apparently no one in that camp can convince him otherwise, because he's god awful at it. He's just awful. He's among the worst I've ever seen. I'm stunned that he's still in that position, frankly, but it's the power of an IHL contract, which apparently is just unbreakable. I thought Bjork handled it really well. It was what was obvious that night a little bit, like you said, was that Freeze had fought it all day. And yet you knew, all you have to know about how bad those tapes must be, Chase. I've known Jimmy Sexton for 20 years. And I know people don't like Jimmy Sexton and people who are fans.
You said tapes.
Yeah, not tapes. Phone records. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I've been thinking tapes because I've been listening to the RFK tapes. Yeah. Sorry.
As far as we know, there are no recordings. Go ahead.
If there are, please, I'd love to hear one. But to my knowledge, there aren't. It's just phone records. Yeah. The phone records must be very damning. Because the reason I say that is I've known Sexton for 20 years. I know a lot of people don't like Sexton. And I think, frankly, fans that don't like Sexton, I think your dislike is ill-founded. Jimmy Sexton's job is very specific. It is not to protect a university, any university. It is not to go easy on any university. His job and his only job is to protect his clients. Period. And he's damn good at it. I mean, he's great. He was unable to get a single penny in a Hugh Freeze buyout. That's all you have to know. That's literally the extent of when people go, how bad are the tapes? That's how bad they are. Not tapes, the phone calls. How bad are the records? That's how bad they are. Jimmy Sexton's great. He's phenomenal at what he does. He's an absolute bulldog. He represents his clients extremely well. He look at what he did in the last coaching search cycle. And I know fans get mad about it, but you got to look at it from his perspective. His job is to line up as many of his clients as he can in lucrative, life-changing contracts. And he did it. He's like moving, like playing a shell game. He's a genius at it. And he was unable to get Hugh Freeze a penny of his buyout. Think about that. That's all you have to know. And so when I heard that, I was like, oh, wow, it must be really bad. And what appears to be the one thing that got negotiated was, hey, if you'll just go away, we'll do our very best to protect what was in those phone records.
It's the million-dollar question, as we kind of bounce around a little bit, that night we didn't know anywhere near what we don't know now, obviously. A lot of things have come out. We've learned a lot that we've talked about and haven't talked about. It is the one question, though, that I had that night and remains, and frankly, I don't know why I haven't just asked, other than it's kind of a strange conversation, because I've seen Hugh several times since then. I asked you this the other day. I don't get how this many calls, whatever the number was, were not marked out. Because, as we know by now, the way this basically worked was Hugh was handed his phone records and a black Sharpie, to make things simple. I don't know what it was, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And could just mark through numbers. Anything that was personal could be marked through. And in my mind, I go, well, I'm going to side on the air of caution, and I'm going to mark out plenty more than maybe whatever, because nobody can prove I did anything wrong. Like, if it's at all a question, mark through it. And now, obviously, a coach's phone records are going to be from area codes all over, recruits, different things. But as far as I know, there wasn't any really strict time limit on this, and yet this many calls made it through the cracks. It was a 16 million dollar mistake that, you know, Freeze is not an idiot. That baffles me to this day that I don't really have an answer for, and frankly I should ask him. It's just kind of uncomfortable.
No, he's not an idiot. There's a lot of ego.
But there's a difference in ego and that, okay, when it comes to this.
Okay, but let's You and I talked about this the other day, so let's share this part of the of our theories with the audience here.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was July.
It was.
That's a weird month for coaches. It's the last time to take any time off.
It's the closest they are to disconnected.
Yeah. So he was going to have to do one of two things, or two of two things. He was going to have to get in that office and sit down with those phone records and really bury himself in them. And frankly, he was going to have help. And to have help, he was going to have to tell people. And this is my theory. I can't prove any of this. I'm like, Chase, I've never asked. But it's my theory that he would have had to have called someone in or some group in and said, hey, okay, here's the thing. There's going to be calls on here to escorts, to massage parlors, whatever, whatever the terminology you want to use. People keep trying to change those terminologies to things. I'm like, whatever, it's whatever. Erotic massage, whatever, whatever. There's calls all over these phone records to those kinds of places. I need to find every one of them and black them out. Now, that would have been the smart thing to do. But to do that, you have to admit to at least one person, and probably to more than one person's, that your whole act is a fraud. And I think admitting that was really difficult, as it would be for anyone.
Yeah, it would be very difficult. Good grief. Well, I mean, for multiple reasons. A, you're admitting it, and B, you're bringing another person into the fold to try to keep a multi-million dollar secret.
Well, the move would have been to hire an attorney and...
But yeah, you got attorney-client privilege and all that stuff.
And his staff or her staff, and they would have all been under the privilege. But I just think for him, that was a really difficult thing to do. My guess is he didn't do it. My guess is that he tried to either do that on his own or probably on his own. And it was an overwhelming task. And he missed. That's my guess. I don't know.
Missed multiple times.
But I mean, we're talking about, what was it, 42,000 calls.
Yeah, something like that. And he marked out thousands.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about 42,000 calls to
no, just total calls on his record.
Total calls. I mean, you're the head coach of a SEC football program. You're on your phone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of calls. There's a lot of texts, a lot of calls. At this point, I mean, it's pretty easy to leave a footprint. I mean, people say, I don't understand how that happened. Well, I kind of do.
Yeah, as soon as your phone was used for that activity, you were going to leave a footprint.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost impossible. That's your eyes would glaze over 42,000 unless you were willing to say to everyone in your life, hey, I've got to get on this. I've got to do this project and I'm going to be gone for the next 10 days. And then I think there's a lot of explaining to do. And this is where it's the part of it that's not my business. It's my theory that there was still some attempts at deception at that point. And I understand that. It's not really a criticism. It just, with that kind of money on the line, I'm a little surprised, frankly, that he didn't go to Sexton and say, and it's my understanding from talking to multiple people that this didn't happen. I've got this problem with my phone records. Can you and your people help me? I don't think he went there. I think he tried to handle it by himself.
Yeah, just on the face, it looks like there were so many you couldn't catch them all, or you just thought it'll be all right if I miss some.
Or some combination thereof.
Yeah, and right.
They look, from step one, Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss underestimated Tom Mars, in my estimation, and they severely underestimated Steve Robertson.
So, yeah. I mean, no argument there. So,
I mean, they underestimated how obsessed with Ole Miss both of those men were. They really underestimated it. That's like, you know, when we first checked on the phone record thing and we got the, it's one call. I was in Birmingham for SEC Media Days, and it was either the Monday or the Tuesday of that week. And we got talking to people. It's just one call. It was probably a pocket dial, a butt dial, whatever. And I got a call from a absolutely perfect source who said, Neil, it's not one call. It's a lot of calls. It's a lot of calls. And they're all to the same kinds of places. And if it's a pocket dial, it is the most coincidental group of pocket dials ever. There's no way. That's when I knew this thing was going to spiral. And then that very next morning, you talk about the kind of calls you get, just you and I have different groups. The next day, it was on Wednesday, because Freeze went on Thursday. Ole Miss went on Thursday at last year's Media Days. And on Wednesday, I was planning to do what I'd been doing all week, which was drop Carson off at UAB soccer camp. It was out there in Mountain Brook, drop him off, and then drive to Hoover and go interview people and send you the interviews, another day of the podcast. And before I could get out of Mountain Brook and on to like 459 to go to Hoover, I had calls from Ashoff, Schlebaugh, Schroeder. And I said, oh, this is not. Frankly, that day, I didn't think Freeze would come to Media Days. And B, I thought if he came to Media Days, it would be a circus. It was going to be another Laramie Tunsil moment for Ole Miss. That's what I really believed. I'm still to this day somewhat shocked that Thursday of Media Days was, to my knowledge, he got one question about the phone call thing.
Is that what it was? I couldn't remember that.
And if I remember correctly, to give credit where it's due, it was either Davis Potter or John Davis. I can't remember which one.
I think it was Davis Potter, but I'm not 100%.
I think you're right. And it was just kind of a basic question of that phone call and whatever. And Hugh gave his answer. And we just sort of moved on.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
What about you? What's the one thing that sticks out to you from that night? And we've talked about. So after it was over, we came back here and taped a podcast.
We did.
I poured a couple of bourbons. I don't think you might have had like a little bit of one.
I was mentally exhausted. I had one. I do actually recall this. We sat down and did it, and you kind of looked at me funny because you go, hey, do you want one? And I said, no, I'm good. And I think you kind of looked at me like, what are you doing?
I have no problem drinking alone.
Yeah, and I don't know. It hadn't really all sunk in. We'd been dealing with it for, like you said, 10, 14 days. I don't know. I think in some of my minds I'm going, okay, what's this going to do to business? What's next for this program? What is this going to mean for everything else? I just was mentally exhausted. Everything was still moving 90 miles an hour and kind of sitting still at the same time. I'll always remember the press conference. I'll always remember that meeting with Ross. Or in the bathroom. And then just kind of the fan hysteria, because you mentioned our phones. I walked out of the pavilion, and as soon as I kind of got back toward the loading dock, I finally looked down at my phone, and it's just hysteria. Just fans, you know, the ones that have been, I hate to say fooled, but you know what I mean, that had believed in Freeze at a higher level. A lot of sadness, a lot of shock from that group. I have acquaintances and friends that were in that group. You've got a lot of the group that said, hey, I told you so. You had a lot of the group that said, okay, I really don't care. I care about the program, not the coach. What now? It was an interesting dissection of just the fan base, how you had so many different thoughts all because of the same act, because of their preconceived feelings on this whole situation. I mean, that, and then, I mean, I'll tell you, it's one of the very early times after we had really gotten him involved at a local level that Russell hit things out of the park. He immediately had like 30 recruit reactions, and I kind of looked over at you and went, oh my gosh, we're not having to deal with that. Can you imagine if we were doing that too right now? And it was one of the main things that really said, wow, he's doing a good job. So, no, I mean, there's just so many things. I mean, you know, however long you and I do this, whether it's 5 years or 50 years or whatever, I mean, the not drinking that night versus really, really needing a drink the day the NCAA investigation all came to a head, that juxtaposition of the two of them will probably be what sticks in my mind the most.
Isn't that funny? The night that the freeze thing happened, I was like, I needed to pour one. And the day of the NCAA thing, I was like, I'm all right. I mean, well, if you were the one just like guzzling. It was so funny. It was just the way different things, I don't know. We have different, obviously different friend groups. I didn't have as much of that as you did, because you just know so many more Ole Miss people than I do.
I think we both talked to Jeffrey that night.
Yeah, well, yeah. For those that want to know what Jeffrey's message was, to put it bluntly, it was, I told you so.
Yeah, he was very cocksure that night.
Yeah, his text to me was, I don't want to be the one that told you I told you so, but. And then there were a lot of people that, you know, had all sorts of radio requests. That's the one thing I just remember saying to people, I don't know. Let me figure out what my schedule is, and had all of that. And then there's a lot of sadness. That's not the word. It's just, I mean, I felt bad for a lot of people, because there's a lot of people that had bought into Hugh Freeze. And, you know, we talk about Hugh Freeze and the mistakes that he made at the end. That 2012 coaching job goes down. I've been doing this for a long time, longer than I really want to admit, because I sort of think of how many – this is my 11th year on the Ole Miss beat when they start the football season. It's a long time, and I covered Auburn for 6 years. I basically covered Alabama for a year. I basically covered LSU for about 3 years. I've covered the Saints through seasons. I've covered a lot of football teams, more than I like to admit, really. And that was one of the best coaching jobs I've ever seen in 2012. That team really had no business doing what it did, to go 7-6. And the recruiting job that he did at the same time, he restored a lot of hope quickly. People forget, because it's easy. You block it out. If you're an Ole Miss fan, you absolutely block out 2011. You just pretend it didn't happen. People forget how bad the program was in 2011. The program, not the team. The team was awful. The program may have actually been worse than the team. And he came in and rebuilt the program, rebuilt the team, restored hope, put that big recruiting class together. They were solid in 13. They were good in 14. They were good in 15. I mean, he did a lot. And then they kind of rose fast and they crashed fast. And it was, I felt bad for people, because I knew there were a lot of people out there that had put a lot of hope in him. And we live in a part of the country where, frankly, how you do something matters. And that's not a criticism. It's just a value system. And a lot of people took pride in this notion that not only was he winning, but he was winning in a way that had more to do, that had to do with things bigger than just the scoreboard. And no matter how many, it's my one knock on Freeze, really, of all the things, my one knock on Freeze is that he never would listen to anyone who said to him, you're in the scoreboard business. All the other stuff that you do is only really, people only get excited about it if you're winning. If you lose, all of that stuff becomes fodder for criticism. And that's just because that's how sports is. Sports is about winning and losing. Make no mistake. You can take 1,000 examples, college or pro. Like the way Nick Saban treats media sometimes, if Nick Saban started losing, Chase, if he rolled a 8-4 this year, and then they dropped to 7-5, and then they went 7-5 again, and he's still snapping at media, that same fan base that goes, yeah, get him, coach, would say, he's getting old and crotchety. It's time to get rid of him. That's just the way people are. All of Joe Madden stuff in Chicago, all the dress up for road trips and the goofy stuff and the T-shirts and all that. It's cute when you're winning. Everybody loves it. Oh, it's great. He's a comic genius. He's so funny. He's whatever. Let him lose. Let him finish second or third in the Central for 2 years in a row. And all of that stuff, people will say it's a distraction. It's all about the scoreboard business. And I don't think Hugh Freeze ever wanted to believe that.
Yeah, some thoughts there, continuing this part of the conversation. First, I'll tell you that the Mid-South's growing faster than ever. But if you'd like to make Memphis your home, the name to know is Stacy Berry, a Keller Williams agent looking to help you find your home in downtown, midtown, Germantown, or Collierville. Keller Williams, the number one real estate agency in the world, in agents, units sold, and volume sold. And the Berry home team is now an integral part of that brand. If you're a first-time home buyer looking to downsize or anything else, Stacy will evaluate and determine your current value and sell it quickly for top dollar. So if you're looking to sell a home, buy a home, or invest in real estate, the Berry home team is the place to call today to let Stacy unlock Memphis for you. 901-481-6420, Stacy Lane Berry at kw.com or theberryhometeam.com. That's Stacy with an E, Berry, the name to know in Memphis.
How well do you know your credit? BHM is an experienced attorney offering a unique, highly personalized service to not only repair credit, but also educate clients on the ever-changing world of credit. He will work with you for an entire year to help you create a personalized plan to raise your credit score to help you meet your financial goals. No one else offers this kind of personalized credit counseling. This is why Gambrell and Associates refer their credits to Brian to get a fresh start. So whether you're looking to fight off debt collectors, get approved for home car loans, or for that luxury credit card, let BHM get your credit fixed and teach you how to take control of your credit. BHM provides you the valuable information he has acquired through years of experience and research. This allows Brian to offer a unique personalized service for anyone in any state, as he is always available to his clients by phone and email. He's ready to work with you. Contact Brian at BHM. It's BH McLaurin Law, BHMCLAURIN Law at gmail.com, or call him at 662-298-2029. The podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. We tell you about their lease deals all the time. If you're driving less than, say, 15,000 miles a year, you ought to look into a lease at Grenada Nissan. Drive a 2017, 2018 vehicle at 1990s prices at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And the podcast is brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB offers the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, all without a 5-minute wait. In addition, OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the email address, or sorry, the website. They have a great app as well, and located there in Holly Springs. Give them a call at 662-252-2321. Or they are now in Oxford as well with G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. They deliver local with the same great hometown service. Yeah, you mentioned the job he did in 2012. And I don't know if people understand, like you said, just where things were then, because they were bad. Orgeron DeNutt they were just as bad nut to freeze, except less talent. The things off the field were probably in a very similar state. I mean, you had to fix morale, you had to fix academics, you had to fix, frankly, off the field issues from a discipline standpoint. I mean, up and down. And then you also had to figure out the roster, because let's think about this for a second. I've got it up. And you can't take this into account from where they ended up at the end of their careers or anything else. From the day they walked in, that 2012 team, here's the depth chart. You got time for this?
Sure.
Okay. Dante Moncrief, great player, good to build around. But as Dante admitted to us on the podcast the other day, a broken down person that didn't know how many catches he had and had been underutilized to the point of, frankly, a guy that is one of the most confident humans I know now was not very confident at that point. I mean, had to be completely rebuilt as a player and a wide receiver at that moment.
I'll go a little further on Dante.
Yeah.
I think he would admit this. Dante was one of those kids that came out of high school very, very confident, very driven, very focused, ready to go. And by the end of that first year, I don't think Dante liked football much anymore. I think his confidence was gone. His enthusiasm was gone. His attitude had begun to change. Your term broken is pretty good. He was not in a great frame of mind.
Terrell Grant was the backup there and someone who looked the part but just never could play the position.
Right.
Cody Core was a true freshman at that moment. Emmanuel McCray, Aaron Morris, Evan Swindoll, A.J. Hawkins, and Pierce Burton were your offensive line. I mean, Pierce Burton doesn't get the credit for what he did for this program in the interim.
Yeah, Pierce Burton and Bo Wallace should have statues.
Yeah, Pierce Burton, we talk about Bo all the time, but Pierce Burton, because here's the issue, and it's nothing against those guys. I mean, these guys, but the backups. Derek Wilson, Justin Bell as a true freshman, I'm sorry, a redshirt freshman. Ben Steele, true freshman. Chase Hughes, Jared Duke, and Patrick Junin were your reserve offensive linemen. And it's where the most luck came in, too, because that's not a second group that would have been productive at all at the SEC level. They got no one hurt. They were essentially able to play an entire football season with six offensive linemen.
Yeah, the big thing was Pierce Burton came in as a JUCO kid and was able to step in.
Was good immediately.
And was good right off the bat.
And Emmanuel was good.
Who?
Emmanuel.
Yeah, he was really good. And they, like you said, they stayed healthy. A couple of offensive line injuries that year, it just no way.
Ferbia Allen and Jamal Mosley, the quintessential locker room cancer, and then Ferbia Allen. I mean, seriously, I don't know if anybody's ever like has a worse reputation for being around a locker room than Jamal Mosley. am I wrong?
No.
Okay. Jamez Logan, Vince Sanders, Corvick Neat, Collins Moore, Philander Moore. Philander Moore name still cracks me up. Bo coming in to be ahead of Barry. On the depth chart, Randall Mackey was the starting running back. They had Jeff Scott, obviously, but on the depth chart for the season opener, Randall Mackey was listed first. Randall Mackey.
Yeah.
Defensively. CJ is a sophomore. I'm assuming he was healthy at that moment. I don't really remember.
I think he was. I think he got hurt later.
All right. Ralph Williams, Brian Bennett, Carlton Martin, true freshman Isaac Gross. Uriah Grant, Gilbert Pena, and Woodrow Hamilton as a redshirt freshman. Really, really young group that later on ended up okay. But again, you got to keep that in context of in 2012, that was your front four.
Sure.
Cameron Wiggum, E.J. Epperson at end. And then at linebacker, they got just the lightning in a bottle season from Denzel Comdici and then made it work enough with Mike Mary, Keith Lewis, and Aaron Garbutt. Secondary, DeHendrick Collins, Wesley Pendleton, Charles Sawyer, and Cinquez Golson as a sophomore. And then Cody Pruitt. Just not a lot there. Trey Elston was a true freshman.
There wasn't much there.
Za'Darius Bryant was a sophomore on that team. He got a lot out of guys that they just haven't got a lot. You know, that prototypical guy or that prototype of a player, there have been a lot of seasons Ole Miss hadn't got that level out of them. And Freeze in that first year really, really did that.
He did a really solid job for about 4 years. And then I just think his celebrity got the best of him. I think he got distracted. I think they took their eye off the ball from a recruiting standpoint. I don't think he updated his staff the way that he needed to over the course of time. I don't know why that's the case, but I do believe that. And it slipped in recruiting, and I think you see that result on today's roster. And I'm not making fun of the kids who are on the roster, like I wrote in 10 Thoughts. If this team doesn't win, it's not going to be because of a lack of effort. It's not going to be because of a lack of care. It's going to be because there's a lack of talent and there's a lack of execution or whatever. The other team's trying to win too. And this is a tough league. And the other teams in this league have not been operating under the same cloud. It's not cost them recruits the way that it has Ole Miss. Everyone, it's so funny, man, in Atlanta, how many people came up to me like, oh, boy, the scholarships are going to really hurt them. It's like, no, not really. What's going to hurt them is that the kids that they lost because of NCAA clowns. That's what hurts them. And that's evident when you look at the roster. And I don't want to criticize current players because it's not their fault. But they're lacking in some spots. In a league where it's very hard to be lacking in some stuff. I wrote this in 10 Thoughts. It's what I really believe. I get the question probably once for every 20 times you get it, Jace. What do you think? How do you think Ole Miss will do? And my answer is always kind of what I just wrote in 10 Thoughts is my only concern is a big concern. When the two biggest question marks for a team are, can you run the football and can you stop the run? Your margin for error is going to be super thin in this league. And so when people go, you think they could win 8 games? Do I think they could? Yeah. Everything has to go right. I mean, literally everything. Do I think they could lose 7 games? Yes, absolutely. Because if things go wrong, a couple of injuries at a spot or two where you just have no depth. Yeah, I can, when people say, I can paint a scenario where they go 8-4. I guess this is the cynic in me. I mean, I'm a guy that's a fan of the best team in the National League, and I'm sitting here telling you right now that team can't win a playoff series because I know what I see from their starting pitching. When I can say, I can turn around and go, well, I can paint a scenario for 4-8 without trying hard. So the importance of that first game, the uniforms and all that, the uniforms are cool. A loss in that first game is going to be, from a win-loss standpoint, incredibly difficult to overcome.
We're 10 or 11 years now since Orgeron. His legacy is going to be at Ole Miss, a complete and utter disaster. The 3-21 SEC record or whatever it was. The mismanagement of the program, the issues that were left for Nutt, and then had an eye for some underdeveloped talent and was a pretty good recruiting evaluator as far as how that worked, but he had a hard time kind of finishing it. Sort of Orgeron's legacy. With Nutt, it's going to be that he never really thought Ole Miss could win at a major high level. He did a really good job increasing morale, did a phenomenal job with that 2008 team considering what Orgeron left, and then hit the snooze button and allowed it to crash. In how many ever years, 10, what's Freeze's legacy going to be?
Oh, gosh. Complicated, in a word. Among those who know, it'll be, I think if you're smart, you take from Hugh Freeze's tenure the following. Holy hell, you can win big at Ole Miss.
Well, that is 1A. There's no doubt about that. It showed that someone who was not overly efficient went to the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, and not for the reasons that people think. Because I know what people listening out there saying, well, yeah, if you buy a bunch of players, that's just it. They didn't buy a bunch of players. They didn't. Now, you can argue that they tried to, and that's a nuanced argument, but they didn't. What it tells you is a fairly inefficient coaching staff put a handful of elite players together, surrounded them with some good players, and had a pretty good scheme. Dave Womack's a really good schematic coach. He just is, guys. He is. You don't stay in the business as long as he does if you're not. And Freeze had an interesting offense. It was hard to prepare for. And sometimes Freeze and Dan Warner combined, when they were able to nuance their – or not nuance, but manipulate their relationship to the point that they were on the same page, that was a pretty – it was a pretty efficient offense. It was pretty deadly. And they came within inches of doing something special. And they did not – I go back and I think – it's so funny because I think about Freeze and people talk about recruiting, and I always scratch my head and think, how am I the only – not the only person, but how am I in such a minority on the truth here, which is – I remember signing days basically ending almost every one, even the big one in 2013. There were a lot of losses for them on signing day. They never had the signing day that was just win, 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 like Alabama does every year, like Georgia does every year.
Well, and it was a different level, but, you know, Nutt had one of those too where he went like 8 of 9 or something on the last day.
Yeah. But he wasn't recruiting elite.
No, 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 no. That was like Raymond Cotton and those guys. But still, just pointed out.
You know, they lost a lot of recruiting battles. Lots of recruiting battles. Jeffrey Simmons, Leo Lewis, Shaheem Carter, Bo Scarborough. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And yet, they were, in two of his years, in the month of November, in the playoff hunt. It's remarkable. That's his legacy. His legacy for everything else is, you know, fall from grace and stuff about, you know, you could do a lot of stuff about morality and taking your eye off the prize and being distracted by celebrity and all of those things. But if you're an Ole Miss fan, I think his legacy is, holy hell, if you ever hired somebody who really was good at what he did and stayed focused, Hugh Freeze proved that you can win at a very high level at Ole Miss. A very high level. And I think before Hugh Freeze, nobody believed that.
You know, legacies always kind of too, they have a tendency to soften things. When there's even the chance to. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, like with Orgeron, that's impossible. But I do think as time goes on, well, and some of this is going to depend on Ole Miss. You know, I mean, Freeze has a chance from a legacy standpoint for people to soften on the indiscretions. And then, this is going to sound crazy, and I'm not even sure I believe it, but as I'm thinking it, maybe I do. Almost as in a no-lose situation, because I do think, at some point, it does become, hey, who'd they really buy? And it's not this SMU level that everybody tries to accuse them of. That it's either Matt Luke wins and Freeze is almost kind of seen as the start of that thing for the program and that elevation of people that it believed they could win. Because as I mentioned, Nutt never did. So you're talking about a while of, you know, coaches not really believing in an SEC team to win at an elite level. And then if things don't go well over the next years, Freeze still remains that blip of glory days, for lack of a better term, where he goes to the two Access Bowls and is in the first college football playoff ranking and all that stuff. I mean, it's a strange deal, but I think over time, wins, big wins, matter more than anything else from a legacy standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, all legacies are complicated.
Everyone.
And his is most complicated just because of all the different things. And I mean, there will be some people who will argue that he underachieved. that his inability to be consistent, his inability to be focused, his teams to be focused week to week is a big part of his legacy. I would say a big part of his legacy was his inability to successfully recruit running backs and linebackers.
Yeah, all that's relevant. They were inconsistent.
I mean, it's just a lot there. It's just a lot to digest with him. But, you know, there were also – I've been on this beat for 10 years, and the biggest wins on this beat have happened when he was the head coach. I mean, the Alabama wins, and was that 14 and 15? Yeah. That October day in Oxford when Katy Perry was here and game day was here and the weather was absolutely perfect and Ole Miss and Alabama played a classic and Ole Miss won it at the end was as electric as I've ever seen. And I've covered national championship games. I've covered big games at lots of different campuses. I've covered Auburn when they knocked off number one Florida at night in Jordan-Hare with Steve Spurrier on the other sideline. And that day in Oxford would rival any of that. So, I mean, I think about that. And then you think about the Auburn game where Laquon Treadwell got his leg broken and how badly they played at Arkansas a couple weeks later. And there were some weird moments, too. The loss at Memphis, Robert Kendici getting a concussion playing running back. Weird stuff. It's all over. His legacy is most complicated.
Yeah, I mean, will the end be the one or two days you remember the most?
Yeah,
just when somebody says Hugh Freeze, I mean, the day that pops in your mind, the end.
Yeah, I'll think of the end, no doubt. I hate that. It's not fair, but yeah, that's what I'll think about. To a degree, I'll think about those first few weeks of the 14 season where you thought this guy's about to really. If you had frozen time that day, in not even the day that they beat Alabama, I'll tell you when I really thought he was for real. If you'd frozen time on that night, a week later, I was in Chicago getting ready to run the marathon. And you guys were in College Station to cover Ole Miss and A&M. And I remember everything about that weekend. It was just like a big weekend in my life. It was a tumultuous weekend kind of in my life. And I was so nervous about that run and just stuff going on. And I remember that game being on and me thinking you need to go to sleep. And then me thinking there's no way you're going to sleep. You're up. And because I actually helped y'all at 1 a.m. I remember thinking, you know, this is not only is this prime for a letdown, this is prime for a big letdown. Because that game the week before was crazy. And those Ole Miss kids were answering Alabama questions Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week. And they showed up and just popped A&M. Just popped them. I know the final score was a little closer than what the game really was. The actual game,
yeah, it was 35-7 at one point. It was a mauling.
It was very similar to the Ole Miss Auburn game this past year, where the final score was nowhere really reflective of what an ass kicking it was. Ole Miss kicked A&M's ass, and I remember thinking, "Wow, man, they're for real. They're for real."
And at that moment, you're going, they're for real probably right now, but God, everybody's back next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like
you're looking at that multi-year deal where you go, whoa.
Yeah, and I thought he's going to put together a big-time recruiting class on this deal, and they're about to be a power. That was the night I thought, they're about to be a power. And I knew they were a really good team, but, you know, that 14 team, nothing against Bo. Of all the people I've ever covered, Bo's in the top five for those that I have the most respect for. But I never watched Bo Wallace and thought, this is an elite quarterback. He got the most out of his skill set. But I never watched Bo and thought, this guy's going to play in the NFL. This guy's a star. I never thought that. I just thought he was gritty and a leader, and kids played for him and all that stuff. But I thought, man, you know, if they ever put an elite quarterback in this system or surrounding with talent, which we saw later with Chad Kelly, they're going to be tough. This is for real. I will think of those moments, and then I will think of the end and think of how you got there from there. And there's a lot. And then I think there's a lot there. I mean, it's a great book that somebody could write if you could get to the truth and really write the truth. It would be a fascinating book.
Yeah. We'll close in a couple minutes. First, State the Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga, is 30 years old this year. One of the oldest companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Ask Jason about the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704 or jlo@communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Master. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Podcast also brought to you by Master Cuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. Time to get those annual contracts signed. Tell them take care of your yard all year long, edging, weed eating, and cutting, as well as yard aeration and any outdoor living areas or outdoor kitchens that you've been putting off, and now is the time. Again, 662-607-7773.
Billy's Pecans are picky about their pecans. They only use the most desirable pecans. And all you have to do to know that that's not a commercial pitch, that's the truth, is order some. And once you do, you'll see, oh man, they're great. The cinnamon spice pecans, fabulous. My favorite, just the plain toasted pecans, are remarkably good. If you have a sweet tooth, they can take care of you. Milk chocolate pecans, dark chocolate pecans, white chocolate pecans, chocolate amaretto pecans, chocolate Grand Marnier pecans. And if you just can't decide, you can get the gift bag assortment. Five 8-ounce gift bags. They're $14.50 each. Get five bags for $72.50. They're at Billy's Pecans. They've got the cheese crispies, coffee cakes. It's all there. Get in touch with them. Billy'sPecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. And when you do, please tell them that you heard about them here on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Russell and I will tape one of those next couple of days. So we'd appreciate it. Billy's Pecans has been great to us. Their product is fantastic. You're heading into the Grove in a few weeks. That'd be a really nice thing to put in, add to your tailgate. The people that tailgate with you would appreciate. You'll be surprised how quick those pecans will disappear off your tailgate table.
We're making the football season really easy for people between locker stockers, Seven South tailgating, a way to cater, and more. You can also get ribs catered from the Oxford Exxon for your tailgate as well.
That's what we're here to help.
Full service really is what you get. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. It feels, we talked about this the other day a little bit. It's been a year. It feels like a decade. Like, it feels like another world since Freeze was the head coach to me.
Yeah. It feels like more than a year, for sure. I mean, like, I look back on, like, 2014, and in some ways it feels like it happened yesterday.
Not even.
Like, I remember so much. And then in some ways, yeah, and in some ways it feels like it's been 10 years, not four.
Yeah. Cinquez and CJ being so emotional that day is what I kind of remember from that day.
Yeah.
Just thinking back.
Chase, I've covered a lot of crazy games. I mean, I'm older than you. I covered the rise and fall of Tommy Tuberville a little bit. I mean, I've covered a lot of stuff at Auburn. I mean, I covered some big wins for that program. I've never covered anything quite as crazy as that day. That was
therapeutic there at the end.
Yeah, for all those people involved. I mean, just I'll never forget just some of the faces of people at Ole Miss, people that I knew that was such a cathartic moment for them.
I will laugh the rest of my life when that kick was missed and my mind goes, oh my God, they're losing 24-23.
Yeah, you and 50,000 people in the stadium thought that.
It's just the automatic thought is, oh my God, after all this, they're going to lose 24-23.
Well, and we've talked about it so many times. My angle, I was down on the opposite end zone and had a great look. And that throw from Sims to the tight end, I can't think of his name right now, was a perfect
OJ
throw.
Howard.
OJ Howard. That throw was perfect, man. It was a great play call, and it was a perfect throw. He was dropping that into his hands, and Cinquez Golson kind of comes out of proverbial nowhere and makes that play. That was
a dude that's an incredible really about moment. 5'8", goes up like that. I mean, he can jump out of a gym.
Yeah, and earlier in his career, he'd failed to jump like that against Evans at A&M, and it cost him, kind of helped cost him a game. It's like the lesson was learned, and he jumps and makes that play. And just one of those days, I remember the kind of the cops out there, like they were going to hold people back, and it was like, dude, give it up. You're just going to get trampled. I mean,
I remember myself going, okay, where am I going to go? Because they're about to come down. So am I getting off the field? Am I trying to back up against the fence? Where do I go right now?
Yeah. What I remember was we'd gotten back up to the press box and people would say things like, yeah, the goalposts are on the square. And you're like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Nothing was shocking at that point.
Yeah. Katy Perry's been crowd surfing at Funky's. Yeah. I can see that.
Sure.
Kind of appropriate for today. I mean, someone said, where would there be a good place to – I remember one of the Alabama people said, where would there be a good place to go eat tonight? And I'm like, forget it, dude. That place is – that square's up for grabs. I mean, maybe there's a place to go get a bite to eat, but I would suggest going to Chili's.
Tupelo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just leave.
Get out of town right now. Anyway, I don't know. But, all right, yeah, 1 year, and now the Matt Luke permanent era begins here in a few weeks. Camp much shorter than that, sometime next week. I haven't seen a schedule yet, but we'll get that in short time, I'm sure. So we'll bring that to you guys as well. Podcast all week long. I don't think we're skipping a day this week. I'm out of town early part of next week, but I think the rest of this week is all clear. So we'll keep coming back. Appreciate you as always. Check rebelgrove.com in the meantime, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday.